Okay, folks, so welcome to another BristolCon Fringe. Congratulations, everybody, for working your way through the hideous Bristol traffic on a day on which, apparently, according to the Bristol Post, the roads are melting because temperatures have got above 25°C. Those of you listening to this on a podcast, yes, Britain doesn't know how to cope with heat any more than it knows how to cope with snow or flooding or any other form of extreme weather, or any weather at all, for that matter. Anyway, here we are. This is our June meeting, and our first reader for tonight is Mr. Andy Goodman.
My name's Andy Goodman. I write young adult action adventures. I've got two books out currently, another two out that are going to be published later this year. The main books are a series of three. I really don't like the term trilogy. It's a series of three. It's about a 16-year-old boy who discovers he's been genetically engineered. And it's about his journey of discovering where he's from, where his origins are, why things have happened, and more importantly, trying to evade the people that want to try and get him back. So what I've got here, first of all, is the opening chapter of the first book. It's called Tiberius Found. Tiberius being the code name that he's been assigned. The blonde man sat on a bench at the eastern end of the Serpentine in London's Hyde Park and sipped coffee from a takeaway cup. The cut of his light grey suit marked it as being expensive and, with one leg casually crossed over the other, he looked like a thousand other office workers enjoying the city mid-morning sun. He watched as a married couple with a young girl threw bread to a horde of hungry ducks. "Attention, Alpha One," a clear voice said through the hidden receiver in the blonde man's ear. "Target has entered through the Park Lane gate. He's heading straight towards the bandstand. No deviation. ETA, 30 seconds. The blonde man took hold of the folded newspaper next to him, stood up from the bench. The child was now crying because her parents had run out of bread, and they tried to cajole her, saying that Daddy would go and buy more, but the girl's tears continued to flow. The blonde man shook his head and turned away. "Is he alone?" he asked. His clipped accent suggested a private education. "Check," the voice confirmed in his ear. "No shadow." "Good. Keep eyes open." "Roger." The man made his way to the elaborate bandstand, dropped his coffee cup into one of the bins, and locked eyes onto his target, a man whose blue shirt was damp with sweat. He approached the sweaty man from behind, and smiled as he saw the man shuffle from one foot to the other, his hands fidgeting at his side. The blonde man stopped close to his target's shoulder, but kept his face turned away. "Don't turn around." The sweating man froze. "I'm going to open my newspaper," the blonde man continued, "and you're going to put the information in it. Do you understand?" The other man nodded, quick and edgy, and pulled a small brown envelope from his trouser pocket. He slid it between the open folds of the newspaper next to him. The blonde man snapped the paper shut and tucked it under one arm. "I hope that this is what we agreed it would be, Michael." He leaned in closer. "For your sake." "Of course it's what you want." Michael turned around to face him. "I just want all of this to be over, Jim, okay?" "I said not to turn around." The threat in his words were clear. "And never speak my name again." The man turned back. Sweat beaded faster on his forehead. He wiped it away and swallowed hard. "I'm sorry, I'm sorry." "I want this to be over too. I really do," Jim continued, his voice now soft and gentle. "I want you to be able to go back to your wife and forget that any of this ever happened. I wonder, though, what Amanda would say if she knew about you and Sophie." "I've given you what you've asked for," Michael replied, close to tears. "There's no point in threatening me anymore. I'm just letting you know that you might forget. But should anything be amiss, then we won't." Michael shook his head. "It isn't. Trust me. That's where you can find the Tiberius file." Jim leaned in closer once more. "Then you've got nothing to worry about. Stay where you are for 5 minutes, then do whatever you want. It's a lovely day, Mike. Why don't you go and feed the ducks?" He turned and walked away. Michael remained rooted to the spot. A tear rolled down his cheek and he gave a shuddering breath of relief. "God help me." He wiped the tear away. "And God help the boy." This was one of the moments that Daniel Henstock dreaded. He He sat in Mrs. Warner's classroom, gripping his desk with both hands, and waited for his test sheet to be handed back. Mrs. Warner was something of a traditionalist, and from time to time, she told her class to put away their tablets, and inflicted an old-fashioned written exam on them. With each test paper she handed back, the noise in the room grew louder. Some of his classmates gave a triumphant yes upon seeing the marks she'd given them, a bold number written in thick red ink in the top right-hand corner of the sheet, whilst others moaned. Throughout it all, Daniel faced straight ahead, concentrating on one of the garish wall posters for the upcoming 2028 Olympic Games in Sao Paulo. He caught the waft of flowery perfume to his right before hearing the clack of heels on the hard floor. "Another splendid effort, Daniel," Mrs. Warner said as she placed the sheet on his workstation, her fingernails painted a soft pink. She'd given him a mark of 99%. She'd even written excellent under it with three exclamation marks. Daniel managed a thin smile. "A shame about question 17, she continued, "but never mind, you're still top of the class." He smiled at her again as she moved past, handing back the rest of the sheets. He'd known the answer to question 17, just as he'd known the answers to all the other questions Mrs. Warner had ever set. Even as far back as primary school, he'd known the answers to all of the questions any of his teachers ever asked. He read the tutorial notes, and the details just stuck. One read was all it took for him to remember. But getting the answers right all the time wasn't always the smartest move. Getting a few of the questions wrong every now and again didn't make him seem quite so perfect. Daniel turned to his right and looked down the room to his friend, his only real friend, Oliver Martins. Oliver was a potty red-faced boy who always had his shirt hanging loose from his school trousers. He had a huge grin on his face and held up his sheet for Daniel to see, 73%, and mouthed, "You?" Daniel held up a firm and grinned. It was then that he caught sight of Terry Llewellyn sitting in the row behind Oliver, scowling. Terry had taken an instant dislike to him ever since they both started at Primrose Hill Academy 5 years ago, and when Daniel started to get near faultless results in his tests, Terry's hatred grew. Llewellyn stood at least 10 centimetres taller than the rest of the boys in his year, had broad shoulders, and played rugby with a brutish enthusiasm. Daniel had overheard some of the girls in his year one day, and if there was any truth in their whispered, giggling gossip, then Terry Llewellyn was an object of desire. "Like most people who are good at sports, I suppose," Daniel had mused to Oliver afterwards. "You know, like footballers." "Yeah," but Oliver had answered with a grimace, "but Terry Llewellyn, he's just a thug." Thug or not, there was something about him that the girls liked, something which Daniel didn't have. Despite this, for some unknown reason, Terry took his academic success as a personal insult, almost as if Daniel getting a high mark made Terry less of a man. And Terry was not the sort of a teenager any of his classmates would choose to annoy. Rumour had it that Llewellyn's father was one of the few bare-knuckle boxers still left. It was an illegal activity, had been for over a dozen years, so Terry always answered the question with an enigmatic grin. The thought that it might actually be true only added to his reputation. Daniel turned back in his seat, knowing that Terry would soon come seeking some sort of retribution. And they were standing at the bank of lockers which sat on one side of the academy's second floor corridor when it happened. It was 3:15 and the rest of the school pushed past them on their way home. Oliver reached inside his locker and pulled out a small box wrapped in bright coloured paper. "Happy birthday," he said, handing it to Daniel. "What?" He shook his head. "You didn't have to get me anything." "Oh, it's not much, but I know it's something you want. Don't open it now, though," Oliver said, closing the locker. "Has your mum got anything planned for tonight?" "She's making out she hasn't, but I'm pretty sure she has. I'd like to get a run and swim in this afternoon, but she likes to do the whole surprise party thing. I don't think I'm going to have a chance." "You're lucky you don't have any brothers or sisters. It's not easy being the youngest of five, you know. I think mum and dad are fed up of birthdays and Christmases now. The best I get is an e-card and an apps voucher, if I'm lucky. When you get home, just give them a wide-eyed surprise look and..." Oliver's face changed. "Don't look now, but Terry Llewellyn and Block are coming." Daniel did turn around. Terry Llewellyn, flanked by two boys of similar build, Kevin Lindley and Colin Lawson, made their way along the corridor against the flow of the rest of the students. The hardness of Terry's eyes and the curl of his lip made anyone that got close to him veer suddenly away. "Why don't you get lost, Martins?" Terry said as he reached them. He almost made it sound like a request. Oliver stayed where he was for a moment. "It's all right," Daniel told him. I'll see you tomorrow." "You sure?" "If you want some, fat boy," Terry said with a smile, "there's plenty to go around." "Just go home, Ollie," Daniel said. "And thanks for the present, yeah?" Oliver nodded, stepped around tearing his two cloaks, and with a final look over his shoulder, his eyes wide with concern, Oliver emerged into the mass of teenagers leaving for the day. "What did your girlfriend get you then?" Terry asked, prodding the wrapped box. "He's not my girlfriend," Daniel replied. "And what's it to you anyway? You think you're so smart, don't you?" "Depends on the company. What do you want, Terry? I should be getting home." Terry put his arm around Daniel's shoulder. "Oh, don't be like that. We just wanted to have a word, like." Daniel turned the corner onto Palmer Court and stopped to wipe his lip once more before reaching his house. The bleeding had stopped, and even the swelling had gone down a little. His left eye was sore from the punch, and he counted himself lucky that Terry's effort had been lacklustre at best. Perhaps his bully was getting bored with it after all. Daniel turned his key in his lock and stepped into the hallway. The house was quiet. He closed the door and took off his jacket, put the crumpled and torn remains of Oliver's present, along with his keys, onto the table. "Mum, Dad, are you in?" He checked his reflection in the mirror. "Does it look as if I've been punched?" He ran a hand through his hair. No, maybe not. He moved over to the lounge door, opened it, and was hit by a wall of sound. "Happy birthday!" The lounge had been decked out with coloured banners and balloons. His parents stood ahead of everyone else, singing their hearts out. Oliver was there also, and Daniel could see his friend was worried about what Terry had done. The singing finished and was quickly followed by hugs and kisses from his mum and dad. Daniel blushed crimson with embarrassment. He was right, though. No one had even noticed the swelling on his cheekbone. It was 20 minutes later, after presents had been handed out, and the birthday cut before Oliver could pull Daniel to one side. They stepped into the hallway where it was quieter. "What happened after I left?" "The usual, you know," Daniel answered, mumbling through a piece of cake. "No big deal." "We're going to have to do something about him." Oliver's eyes flicked doubtfully. "Well, you know what I mean, you know, someone should anyway." "Do what, though?" Daniel laughed. "Saying anything will just make it worse. Besides, I think he's losing interest in it all. His punches didn't hurt half as much as they used to. Look, I'm not even bruised, am I? And after term finishes, I'll probably never have to see him again. So what's the point?" "Even so, look, just forget it. If he behaves like that in the real world, then he'll have the police after him in no time. I'd be surprised if they don't already have him on their radar. Don't worry about him. He's nothing." "Don't worry about him? Right. Well, he picks on you, so whatever you think's best." "Yeah, just forget him." There was a moment or two of awkward silence before Oliver spoke again. Anyway, did you like your present?" Daniel bit his lip and glanced down at the torn, crumpled box he'd left by the glass table. Oliver followed his eye. A polymer action figure lay broken in the paper and card box. "What happened to it?" Daniel shrugged. "Terry broke it?" Oliver's voice was strained. No, he just knocked it out of my hand. It was Kevin Linley who stepped on it." Oliver reached down and picked up the box. The figure was of a character from the sci-fi series Border Patrol. "But Chet Peterson is your favourite." "He is. It was a really great present. Look, I'll pay you back for it." No, it wasn't you who broke it." Oliver's face creased and looked as if he was about to burst into tears. "It's not right. A little bird tells me that you had some test marks back today." Daniel's mum appeared from behind them. She wore her best dress and even put her antique pearls on for the occasion. She put an arm around Daniel's shoulder and kissed his cheek, leaving a ruby red lipstick mark behind. Oliver quickly hid the broken present behind his back. Daniel turned to his friend. "A little bird, huh?" "My mum told your mum when she dropped me off," Oliver apologised. "Sorry." "So," his mum continued, "how did it go?" Yeah, it went well." "Is that all? It just went well? What mark did you get?" He was almost too embarrassed to say. 99%. She wrapped her arms around him and kissed his face several more times. "You're such a clever boy. We're so proud of you." Daniel fought his way out of her embrace, his cheeks as red as a lipstick. "It was an easy test. Everyone scored high." "Nonsense," she answered with a smile. "You're a very special boy." Arthur Thomas took his usual seat on the 6:45 maglev evening train from London's Paddington station heading west. He took out a sleek data terminal from his briefcase and started to update a file. The compartment filed quickly, and even in first class, there were a few empty seats. The sound of someone sitting opposite him caused him to look up. Instead of seeing Elaine Richardson, the middle-aged barrister who normally sat there, Arthur stared into the face of a blonde man wearing a fashionable light grey suit. Excuse me, Arthur said, his voice soft and reedy. I'm sorry, but I believe that seat's been reserved by Miss Richardson. Look, the reservation code's in the seat back." The man regarded him thoughtfully for a moment, then twisted around to look at the digital display. He turned back to face Arthur. If she turns up, I'll move. I see, Oliver, Arthur muttered. But she always catches this train, you know. Like I said, if she turns up, I'll move. Although the man spoke politely and had the faint trace of a smile on his lips, there was a distinct, hard, underlying edge to his voice. Arthur smiled back and gave the trace of a nod. He wasn't a coward, it was just that he detested any form of confrontation. Yes, of course. The siren on the platform sounded, and the train doors closed silently. He rose on its magnetic cushion and, without as much as a gentle jolt, made its way out of the station. Looks like I get to keep the seat after all, the man said with a broader smile. Must be my lucky day. I'm Jim, by the way. Arthur. He gave a faint smile and replied and turned back to his data terminal. Jim continued to stare at him for a few moments before glancing at a red-headed man sitting two places behind Arthur. Their eyes met, and Jim nodded once. The man produced a can of lager from his jacket, opened it up and took a swig. He stood up and, in a loud, out-of-tune voice, began singing a football song. He swung the can around and spilled beer onto the other passengers. Arthur turned at the noise, just as half of the can's contents were tipped over him. He raised his arms in a futile attempt to protect himself. What the hell do you think you're doing? Sorry, the man said, clambering over the passengers between them, his speech slurred. I'm really sorry, mate. Are you all right? Don't be ridiculous. Of course I'm not. Look at me. The man wiped a dirty hand down Arthur's shirt. I'm really sorry. You're making it worse. Please, just go and sit back down, will you? Now, there's no need to get funny about it, the drunk replied, his voice gaining an angry edge. I said I was sorry. I'm not getting angry, Arthur replied, a forced smile on his lips. All I asked was if you could go back to your seat. I get you, the drunk replied, poking a finger into Arthur's chest. Just because you wear a fancy suit and you work in an office, you think you're better than me, don't you? He jerked the can at Arthur, and more lager spilled onto him. Please, come on then. The drunk grabbed Arthur with his free hand and hauled him into the aisle. Let's see how tough you are. At that moment, a porter entered the carriage from the far end, spotted what was happening, and with a frown, made his way towards the men. As soon as Arthur had been pulled from his seat, and with everyone else paying attention to what was happening in the aisle, Jim snatched the data terminal from on top of the table and moved it onto his lap. From his jacket, he produced a small display unit with a universal connector lead attached to one end and plugged it into Arthur's terminal. Jim tapped on the display unit screen a few times and a message flashed, clone device. Jim tapped the screen and once more the message changed to clone in progress. A status bar appeared at the bottom of the screen, charting the process. What's the problem here? The porter asked as he reached Arthur and the drink. This lunatic threw beer all over me, Arthur replied, and when I asked him to sit back down in his seat, he became extremely violent. He was singing too, and this is supposed to be a quiet carriage after all. There's no trouble, the drunk said to the porter. No trouble. His eyes darted to Jim, and no one else noticed the slight shake of the blonde man's head. Do you have a ticket for this carriage? The porter asked the drunk. Of course I do. Can I see it? The drunk patted his pockets, spilling more beer over Arthur as he did so. Oh, this is ridiculous, Arthur said to the porter. This man clearly has no ticket. The drunk flashed his eyes towards Jim once more, who gave another, almost imperceptible shake of the head. The drunk took another swig of lager. Sir, do you have a ticket? The progress bar on the data unit read 100%, and the message changed to clone complete. Jim disconnected Arthur's terminal and slid back onto the table. All right, the drunk said to the porter. It's a fair cop, you got me. He held his wrist safe. I'll come quietly, officer. As the porter led the drunk away along the carriage, Arthur sat back down, dabbing his jacket with a handkerchief. Jim flashed him a smile. Some people, huh? Jim made his way through the automatic barriers at Reading Station and headed to a saloon car parked close by. He sat in the passenger seat and plugged the data display unit's connector into a socket in the car's central console. A panel in the dashboard spun around to reveal a touchscreen. Jim tapped at the screen and a list of copied files from Arthur's terminal was displayed. He selected the one named Tiberius. The car driver's door opened and the red-headed drunk from the train sat next to him. Jim opened the Tiberius file and a class photo of Daniel Henstock displayed on the screen, its timestamp showing it had been taken 3 years ago. He scrolled down and Daniel's home address and personal details were displayed. Is it what we want? The redhead asked, all traces of his slurred speech now gone. Jim nodded, that's the one. And it's his birthday too. 16 today. What present do you think he'd like? The redhead gave a snigger, nothing that he's going to get. He fired the car's ignition and eased it out of the car park. Jim took a mobile phone from his jacket, and the clear voice said, "Call. Control." The call clicked through after one ring. "Yes," a cold voice answered. "It's Alpha 1, sir. Our intel was correct. The old man did have the data." Jim paused, as if to add more weight to his next four words. "Tiberius has been found."